From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, the KPCC podcast, Tell Them I Am, features Muslims from all walks of life who challenge stereotypes about Islam and its followers. Then comedian Rami Youssef explores what it means to be a good Muslim in his Hulu series, Rami. But the new show is not exactly a how-to guide.
Maybe someone can be like, hey, you know what you shouldn't do? What Rami did on that show. Like, even if there's like a contingent of Muslims who hate the show and use it as an example of how not to live, that's a success to me.
And Chai, the Japanese punk band, redefining what it means to be cute. All that coming up on The Frame. KPCC has a new limited series podcast. It's called Tell Them I Am and features personal stories by Muslim voices about a defining moment in their lives. Some of the guests include Tan France, Alia Shawkat, Rami Youssef, and more, with a new episode dropping each weekday of Ramadan. I sat down with Misha Youssef. She's the host and producer of the podcast, and I began by asking her about how labels play a role in the Muslim narrative.
What's interesting about certain labels is that they come with kind of a one-dimensional perception of who the person who assumes that label is, right? So a lot of times when people think Muslim, they think extremely religious. They tend to think Arab. They think generally male or in some way associated with Islamophobia or terrorism or existing in relationship to Trump. And I think there are a lot of Muslims who are culturally Muslim, who are not extremely religious, who are in the arts and the sciences and doing work that has no relationship to politics or the mainstream narrative of Islamophobia. And yet those are stories that we don't get to hear because we want to hear from people who are Muslim first, quote unquote.
And that seems to be part of what you talk about very early in the podcast about how you see yourself in that narrative.
I think as someone who moved here from Pakistan, I was constantly trying to see how to best fit in to America. And very early on, I noticed, this was post 9/11 in 2003, that if I led with being Muslim first, all of a sudden people assumed certain things about me, that I probably was supposed to wear a headscarf, that I probably prayed five times a day or had a very limited view of the world or was a meek, victimized woman. And that's one of the reasons that I didn't own up to that aspect of my identity until very recently, almost until this podcast came out. And I think it's really important to start telling those stories of living outside of religion. Like, I grew up being pigeonholed. And I think that's why this project is so personal. There have been moments of racism and discrimination and even Islamophobia against me from people that I love dearly. And I think to some extent, addressing those things too head on is ineffective, right? It's more effective to tell stories that paint a full picture of who I am as a human being or who any of these people are as a human being. Because if the goal is to change people's minds, the only way to do that is to show humanity.
Does that lead to how you booked guests and about what you were looking for? Was there an organizing principle to the kinds of people who you thought would be good to have on the show?
We were looking to talk to people who represented the diversity of Muslims in America and the world. And so it was really important to us to have Muslims who came from a South Asian background. We wanted to make sure that we represented queer Muslims, Black Muslims, because, you know, they're the oldest Muslims in America. We wanted to make sure we had a pretty even balance of women and men, women who wore the hijab and women who did not wear the hijab, and then people's relationship to Islam, and then also career diversity, you know. We have chefs, we have astronomers, and then we have actors and filmmakers and scholars.
You talk with the actor Alia Shawkat about something that happens in her life. Let's listen to this clip.
You know, it felt like months had passed, but really had only been like a couple weeks probably. But I just had completely forgot about it. I was like, oh, we're good. Because I used to just function in that kind of way. I was like, whatever it takes, like, it's fun. Never thought of the aftermath. And then my parents sat me down and my mom starts crying. And my dad tells me that the results, like the guy said, it had the highest rating of like methamphetamine they had ever seen. My friend's dad was like a meth head, it turns out. But my parents thought I was like insane. My mom was like, meth, Alia? You're a meth head? And I was like, no, I swear I just smoke pot.
The story is she has done a pee swap with somebody who is proffered what is supposed to be clean urine. But he's like, Not so much clean. What is it about that story that you love, and why was she a good fit for the podcast?
I think Ali is one of those people that you don't think of as Muslim. When you think of Ali, you think of like a cultural icon, someone who was on Arrested Development, which has a cult following, but also an iconic status in American pop culture. And she's also someone who's only recently come to terms with her identity as half Iraqi and Muslim, and has become very active in Middle East politics. But that story specifically, I think, is so interesting because so many teenagers have, you know, defined themselves at one point or another in relation to their parents, like in rebellion against their parents. And Alia's whole story is about rebelling against her dad by smoking pot. And if you listen to the episode, you get to that moment where she somehow convinces someone else to swap pee and ends up in an even worse situation.
I want to play another clip. This is from Tan France from Queer Eye, and he's talking about the behavior that his mom taught him and how it's become fundamental to who he is.
My mom was always just like any good Asian mom. She was constantly scolding us for something. And she would always say, well, don't do that because this is going to happen. And don't do this because this is going to happen. And it would inevitably happen. And then she would very calmly look at us and say, told you it was going to happen. Not, oh, let me help you, you're clearly bleeding. It was a case of, no, I told you that was going to happen. So you deal with it now.
Was that something that you were always looking for, these little moments of epiphany and how it defined the person and changed their lives?
We wanted tiny moments that people had never talked about. The kind of moments that you maybe mention over and over again at the dinner table, but in an interview are never asked about. One of our guests, you know, talks about how she was attacked by 100 bees and that defined her relationship with nature. But she's a hip hop dancer, a Muslim woman, a hijabi woman. In most interviews, she's asked about those things instead, you know? And I think the things that make people most relatable are those moments that take decades to uncover. And we wanted to fast forward and just get to that part really quickly.
Misha Youssef is the producer and host of the podcast Tell Them I Am. Misha, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Coming up, one of the subjects on Tell Them I Am was also recently a guest on our show. We'll hear from comedian Rami Youssef. ...2019 is shaping up to be a breakout year for Rami Youssef. The actor and comedian not only has an HBO stand-up special on the way, but he also has a new series called Rami that's running on Hulu. Youssef created and stars in the semi-autobiographical series about a Muslim American millennial. He's living in New Jersey with his sister and Middle Eastern immigrant parents. The show mines some previously unexplored territory for a comedy series, in particular, what it means to be a good Muslim. When Youssef came by the Frame Studios, we started with how he was first interested in acting and comedy.
Really early on, I started making things. When I was like in middle school, I got a camera. I went to a high school that had an amazing TV program, and I just loved editing and shooting and writing. And then little by little, I was like, you know, I'd give a friend a script and I'd shoot him and I'd be like, do it like this. And then before I knew it, I was kind of acting in it. And then, you know, I moved to LA to act. But I, you know, really liked doing stage work and very quickly was doing stand up. And that kind of the stand up has become the foundation for everything that I'm creating and doing.
When you first started doing stand up, was it something close to what you do now, or was it a search to figure out what your comic identity would be and how close that would be to your real self?
Yeah, I feel like I hear it all the time of like, you know, your first couple years doing stand up, you're doing an impression of what you think a stand up comedian is because you have your influences, you have what you're into, and like you just want the crowd to be happy at first. And then slowly it just became more personal. I think once I realized, you know, my stand up should just be very personal and should almost be a place for me to work out what I'm thinking about, work out my problems, work out those things, that being the approach that I was most comfortable with, which is not for everybody. Some people are like straight up joke writers.
Was it most comfortable because it felt good doing it, because the audience was reacting to it? I mean, it's easy to say it's authentic, but it also has to work.
Yeah.
How did you know it was the right choice, I guess?
It was the right choice for me because I think the things that I was making personal were things people wanted to hear about. So I think that, you know, the background that I come from, my faith, my culture, all of those things, seeing the personal side of those things is something that I don't think a lot of people know anything about. And so I would just kind of like, to me, it's like, you know, I'm talking about, you know, I was fasting during Ramadan doing stand up and I start talking about it and I'm like, yeah, you know, I believe in God. And you just feel the room go, what? Like the, cause you know, most comedians' punchline is like, you know, yeah, then we go to church, right? It's like church is like a joke, you know? And so I would be like, oh wait, that's not my reality. And very quickly I realized just talking about my reality made the crowd kind of turn their head like, oh, that's what's real to you. And so that became clear to me that, you know, all I really had to do was just talk about that stuff.
I want to play you something. It's from 2017. It's a really good moment in your professional career. You do a gig with Stephen Colbert.
My name is Rami Youssef, and I'm Muslim. Like, yeah. Yeah, like from the news. Have you guys seen our show? Fox News or any of the news is really, they're all about us. I get why people are afraid. I do, especially if you don't know a Muslim, of course. I mean, even sometimes if I watch for too long, I'm like, whoa, am I gonna do something? Like, they make it seem inevitable. I feel like no matter what I do, I'm just gonna turn 30 and get a Hogwarts letter from ISIS.
There are seeds of your Hulu series in what you said in Colbert. And I'm wondering, how did what you say in stand-up start becoming the basis for a series? And I suspect it's not a natural evolution, but it goes through steps. How did it evolve?
I was surprised at how natural it was, actually, because I realized because of the nature of it being personal and a lot of that, it jumped on screen pretty quick. I mean, I really wanted to lean on the stand-up because I knew it worked. I was like, I know this connects with people. I've been in the room with them. And I know that, you know, we can put this line in a character's mouth, or we can put the essence of this to be the subject of a scene or an episode. And so every episode started with stand-up. Our pilot is all my stand-up. Every scene is stand-up. And then as the show kind of went on, it was at least making sure every episode had a stand-up premise in it.
We're talking with Rami Youssef, who's the creator and star of the Hulu series, Rami. I want to take a listen from that pilot episode.
Yeah, I have sex even though I'm not married, and I'm probably going to try mushrooms one day. So what? Is that, that means I'm not a good Muslim? Like, I can't do it because I don't follow all the rules and the judgments that are always just being put on us. And then I do the same thing. I put the same judgments on everyone around me.
There's so much about what's set in this pilot, about what the whole series about how you define what is good. What is a good son? What is a good person? What is a good boyfriend? What is a good Muslim? And I'm wondering, as you were thinking about the show and talking to writers and showrunners about what you wanted the show to be about, how did you explain what you thought its center was?
It's the question that I'm constantly trying to ask myself on stage and personally in my head. You know, I mean, when we first thought of the show, I was walking around with Gerard, who EPs the show with
Gerard Carmichael from the Carmichaels.
And we both were like, man, we both believe in God, but we've never really seen it on screen where it's not super cheesy or really on the nose or really clean, right? Because a lot of the time, like, you know, somebody is a believer and so they want to make work that adheres to the rules that they believe. But what ends up happening is you make something that is kind of disconnected from reality. So we were really excited about being like, no, what does it look like when there's this like rattling in your head of like guilt? You know, what does it look like when you're just trying to be good? And I had this stand-up joke that I would tell, you know, as Muslims, we pray on Friday, you know, and I was like, well, in my life is, I love going to Friday prayers. There's Friday prayers and then there's Friday night. And that's what this show is. This show is, we're seeing him really plugged in. He has this spiritual side to him. And then he goes out on Friday night and he's in that moment too. And every episode, everything exists in that space.
There are some very interesting casting choices you make in the series, and none, I think, is more important than your friend Steve Way. Steve is cast as a character named Steve, and Steve uses a wheelchair. He has muscular dystrophy.
Steve has been a part of my life. You know, we've known each other since the third grade, and that high school TV program I told you about, we all started together there. It was like me, him, my friends John and Kyle, and I always knew he could act, and I always, you know, had seen it. We made our own things, but never on, you know, a level, you know, he didn't have like an IMDb. And so, we're putting together this series, and, you know, the series is very much in this Arab Muslim community. And, you know, on any show, you're going to want a perspective from the outside. You know, you're going to want a friend who isn't that thing. And immediately I was like, well, that should be Steve. You know, like if there's going to be a quote unquote white friend or something like that. No, I want to get into this relationship that is like foundationally a big part of my life and really humanizing someone in his situation, because I think so much of the perspective is, you know, of the feeling bad. And you know, we would always joke, my friend Kyle has a joke about Steve where he says, you know, if you'd really got to know him, you probably wouldn't like him. You know, no one is treating him differently. He is as much of a hassle as any other friend would be. And to show that dynamic was really important, I think, because then we get to really start fleshing out his desires and what he wants. And we get to question whether he should want those things.
What do you hope once it premieres people take away from the show?
I hope people have some conversations that maybe they wouldn't have had before they watched it. I think this is a family show, but I do think that families will watch it in separate rooms. I think that there is a level of awkwardness to, you know, some of the sexual stuff and just some of the more taboo things that maybe we get into. And so I couldn't, you know, I'm not trying to watch this with my parents, but I hope they watch it and then we have a conversation. And I think that what I would hate for is somebody watch this and be like, well, this is how to be a Muslim, or this is all Muslims. That's a problem, you know, because that's not what this is. But maybe this could be a reference point. You know, Ramadan's next month, and maybe people don't know how to talk about some of the things we struggle with. Maybe someone can be like, hey, you know what you shouldn't do? What Rami did on that show. Like, even if there's like a contingent of Muslims who hate the show and use it as an example of how not to live, that's a success to me. That makes it effective as a piece of art or something going out into the world, that it can be a frame of reference for something that didn't have a reference before.
Before we take a short break, I just want to note the passing of actress Doris Day. She started out in the late 1930s as a singer with big bands, then moved into acting, where she took on some seriously meaty roles. But she segued into romantic comedies and became famous for her wholesome girl-next-door image. Her film career ended in 1968, and then she launched a successful TV career. Day was the recipient of a Lifetime Achievement Award from the LA Film Critics Association and three Grammy Hall of Fame Awards. Doris Day died today at age 97.
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore trees. Dream a little dream of me.
Stay tuned for more of The Frame.
Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me.
Now we're going to hear from an all-girl punk band that's trying to challenge Japanese beauty standards. Chai, like chai tea, formed in Nagoya, Japan. Through infectious music and lyrics about body positivity, they're spreading a philosophy that they call neo-kawaii, or new cute. The Frame's Jonathan Shiflett spoke with Chai before a recent LA show. The four members were joined by their translator.
My name is Mana, vocal and keyboard.
My name is Kana, vocal and guitar.
My name is Yuki, I'm bass.
My name is Yuna. I'm drums.
We are Chai. まず可愛いっていう言葉は日本にとってのビューティースタンダードで、それが
可愛い is actually a word used to describe Japan's beauty standards. The definition is really, really narrow. There's only a certain type of look that you can have in order to fit into that standard. We felt like that was something was wrong with that. We traditionally don't fit into those Japanese beauty standards. So for us, we actually created the word neo-kawaii to express everyone else that's not in those beauty standards. Pretty much it translates to new cute, but we are the new cute. Everybody that doesn't fit into those narrow standards of the traditional kawaii can be neo-kawaii.
Nagoya wa...名古屋のバンドはすごいメロコア。
Yeah, when we first came out, actually, Nagoya is actually known for more like a rock scene, a punk rock scene, and they still hold on to that weird scene. So a lot of underground bands are in Nagoya. We are actually very different, and when we came out, we actually were like, I mean, that's difficult to say in English, but it's pretty much we were a band that was not above floating, but kind of floating above the others because we were so different.So we're kind of like the outsiders, the weirdos in a way. Yeah, we were the outsiders. All-girl band doing genre-less music versus like the hardcore punk rock scene that Nagoya has. So yeah, we were very different from everyone else at that time. Here we go.
まずチャイはすごいファッションがとにかく大好きで、なんだろう。
We feel like fashion is really, really important to us. We do it, live it every day. As far as our fashion, the reason why we made that song Fashionista is because in Japan, there's also a weird beauty standard when it comes to fashion. As soon as one thing comes out, everybody dresses the same. But we feel like we love thrift stores. We love thrift shopping. That's all we do.Everything is a thrift store that they're wearing right now, actually. We enjoy having to create how we feel that day with our clothes, so we don't follow trends. We don't follow what everybody else wears in Japan on purpose. It's because the song is actually telling everybody you don't need to follow trends. Like, you dressing how you want to dress every single day, whether it's thrift shop, you know, clothes or whatever it is, that's what makes you a fashionista.Yuna, actually our drummer, she's a really sweet girl. She's the sweetest, she's the nicest, and she actually is the glue that holds all of us together.
Yuki は、の歌詞も書くし、チャイのその
ビデオ。Yuki, our bassist, she illustrates all of our jacket photos for CDs, EPs, everything. She does all the inside illustrations, and she also is the songwriter. So we call her the most creative one.
My bass.秘密主義
And also she's a very my pace person. So everything's my pace. So my pace and artistic.
Slow walking every day.
And she walks slow every day.
Kana wa chai no naka de.
So Mana again, speaking on my twin sister Kana. Kana the guitarist, she is actually the only one who knows how to arrange chords in the group. So she does all the arranging for the music. She's also very stubborn, but in a good way. So her stubbornness actually helps develop our songs, our concept, our sound, because she's so persistent on what the sound she wants it to be. So yeah, Kana's the mama.
Mama. Mana wa.
Yeah, so this is Kana speaking on my twin sister, Mana, the vocalist. So Mana is, we call her the engine of the group. We don't really have a set leader, although we both all take different leadership roles. However, Mana is interesting because she has the loudest voice. she is the most energetic, and she's the one who actually decided on let's be a band. So she's actually the start of pretty much everything. So Mana is the engine. She is the mover. She moves the group.
ステージ前はその、そもそも私たちは自信がない。
So this is Mana speaking on our pre-live ritual. So we have two actually. So one, we actually tell each other really positive things. We compliment one another. And the reason being is because we, growing up, we actually personally always been insecure. We have a lot of insecurities. So telling each other we can do it, we're the best, we're awesome, like right before we hit the stage actually boosts our confidence so that we can give everyone the best show ever that we can do. Also, before we leave our house, we actually imagine that there are sparkles around. And that you can grab with your hands the sparkles. And what we do is we throw it on top of ourselves. And that's our way of showing like, oh, we're shining, we're sparkling, like we can do anything. So it's a boost of confidence as well. So us doing our pre-live rituals is all about boosting our confidence and giving everybody the best show.
Thank you so much.
Yay!
That was the Japanese pop band Chai. And that's our show for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.